Well, this hour we'll continue chatting with Peter Kirby about his book, Chemtrails Exposed, but we'll also take your phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. George Norrie with you. Peter Kirby with us as we talk about his work and his second edition of his book, Chemtrails Exposed. Peter, as we get into calls here, where can people get this book, Chemtrails Exposed?
Yes, sir. The book is available on Amazon.com exclusively.
Perfect. Perfect. Can they also pick it off your website or simply Amazon?
Well, I'd like people to go to my website, peterakirby.com. They can join my email list there. And, of course, there are plenty of links to the book on the homepage.
You have said that the Vatican might be involved in some of this geoengineering funding. What the heck are they up to?
Yes. I had an idea that you might ask about this.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Well, we have here... Popes Benedict and Francis have been voicing quite a bit of concern about man-made global warming, and we know that the geoengineers are saying that, you know, this is the cure to man-made global warming. So, you know, just by their rhetoric of saying that global warming is a problem, they're at least tacitly supporting this type of, some type of cure. And they've actually had some panel discussions about what we call SRM geoengineering. We commonly refer to it as chemtrails. But the Vatican produced a paper called "The Fate of Mountain Glaciers in the Anthropocene," and in the panel discussions, SRM geoengineering was discussed. And in 2017. Pope Francis had a new organization called the Dicastery for Promoting Integral Human Development, and there was a geoengineering seminar held by this group, and it was organized by the Carnegie Climate Geoengineering Governance Initiative. And as I mentioned earlier, I mentioned the Council on Foreign Relations, but the Carnegie funded groups have been quite active in the area of promoting the SRM geoengineering fix to global warming, and they've been involved with the Vatican here. And also, before, during, and after World War II, you probably know this history, the Roman Catholic Church basically supported the whole Nazi regime.
Yes, they sure did.
They caused the German Catholic laity to stand down. The Nazis were quite concerned about the German Catholic laity as the Nazis were coming to power, because they saw them as a threat, because the German Catholic laity had previously repelled efforts to squelch them and diminish them and all this many years earlier. So, I mean, Hitler even wrote about it in Mein Kampf. And so this whole squashing of the German Catholic laity before and during World War II, it was all engineered by the Vatican, and specifically Pope Pius XII, also known as Hitler's Pope. And so, but it wasn't only that. Even after the war, the Nazis they found shelter in the Vatican and shelter in Rome. The Vatican organized rat lines to South America, and so the Vatican has been involved. You know, as I mentioned earlier, there's apparently been a lot of former Nazi scientists involved in the New Manhattan Project. So there's definitely Nazi connections to the New Manhattan Project. So I've been making those connections. And then also we have the Vatican Bank, which was founded by Hitler's Pope.
Which is still in existence.
Yes, a very secretive, very mysterious organization. And the CEO of the bank, the ultimate ruler, is the reigning Pope, whoever that is at the time. And it was founded by Hitler's Pope, Pius the 12th. And we do know that the Vatican Bank has been involved in some very shady operations over the years. People familiar with Operation Gladio.
Did they finance the Nazis?
Oh, I don't know. but they laundered drug money for this Operation Gladio, which was a big terrorist movement. They funded, the Vatican Bank laundered money through Swiss banks. The Swiss banks gave it out to these people.
That was a huge scandal, wasn't it?
Operation Gladio, yes, it's very well documented. There's been a couple of really great books that I know of that have been written about it. One by a guy with the last name of Richard Cottrell was one, and Paul Williams has written about it as well. And so I'm looking at this and I'm saying to myself, well, they're laundering money that's eventually used for these crimes against humanity. Maybe they're continuing to do that today. It hasn't been fully disclosed. Nothing they do has ever been fully disclosed. So it would make sense to me that at least partial funding might be coming from laundered money that's gone through the Vatican Bank. The Vatican has been a major shareholder in businesses that I have connected to the New Manhattan Project, such as General Electric, IBM, Chase Manhattan Bank, and Standard Oil. So there's quite a few interesting connections there.
As you were uncovering these things, Peter, it sounds like they mushroomed. They got bigger and bigger and bigger.
This thing is huge. I mean, what can I say? It's an epic saga. I'm tracing this thing back to the late 1800s, and the motives for the whole thing go back into ancient history, and it's just we're talking about huge fleets of aircraft. We're talking about the rise and fall of nations and the most powerful organizations in the world. I mean, they're not giving up on this. George, I'm a big Trump supporter, and I thought, as soon as Trump gets into office, these chemtrails are going to disappear pretty quick. Well, it didn't really turn out that way, did it? This thing, I think they are really stuck on this thing, and they really do not want to give this one up. I think it has a lot to do with the secret space program and the domination of space. And I do believe that the Trump administration, especially with this Space Force, is trying to make a move to, regain control of the heavens, as we might say.
Let's take some calls here. We'll pick it up by going to Joe in Long Island, New York, to get us started.
Yeah,
hey, Joseph.
I wanted to ask Peter two questions. One would be, you speak of originally how paperclip and even how the CIA seems to have a lot of scientific access. I'm wondering about that procurement process. In other words, how did they procure these scientists, and who got the original scientists from Paperclip? Who was involved with that? My second question would be, I did read something online about this, that some on-the-ground people considered this chemical warfare, and they did or they might send up heat-seeking missiles, which I believe is what happened to an aircraft right after September 11th in New York. An aircraft went down right in the Rockaways. The engine landed in a gas station. I spoke to a pilot about that history, and he said that was definitely from a heat-seeking missile that could be shot from just like a handheld device, like a shoulder harness from a truck, and they could just move off and nobody would ever know it.
Okay, yeah, so your first question was basically who ran Operation Paperclip, and it all started with the OSS. That was the precursor to today's CIA. It was called the Office of Strategic Services. It was an Army organization, I believe. And they were the preeminent American military intelligence group during World War II. And then as soon as World War II ended, the OSS morphed into a couple of different organizations and eventually ended up being the CIA. But throughout that whole process, it was that group that morphed and changed names basically a few times. But during that, it was that group that was bringing in the Operation Paperclip Nazis. It was all started and it looks to be all orchestrated by Alan Dulles. He made a deal with a couple of Nazi generals, Reinhard Galen and General Wolf. I'm forgetting his first name right now. That was called Operation Sunrise. And all of that was very well covered in Paul Williams' book, Operation Gladio, The Unholy Alliance Between the Mafia, the CIA, and the Vatican. I highly recommend that book. I highly recommend, everything I've read from Paul Williams has been just outstanding. If you're not familiar with his work, I highly recommend it. What the other thing that you're talking about, I think you're referring to Flight 800, am I not mistaken?
That probably was it, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know too much about that. I mean, I guess how this plays into the new Manhattan Project would be something, you know, like, why don't we just shoot one of these things down? You know, I don't know. And I don't want to, even propose such a thing. I want no violence. I want no destruction of anything. I just want the project to end. I'm really not too familiar with Flight 800 or heat-seeking missiles, so I don't know how to answer that.
All right, next up, let's go to Mike in Fairbanks, Alaska. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Good evening, George, and good evening, Peter.
Hi, Mike.
Yeah, I've got two unusual things, Peter. This has always puzzled me, and people don't believe me, but I was on my way from Manhattan Beach, Lawndale, to Lake Hemet when the Challenger exploded, and it took me about 2.5-plus hours to get there. And I noticed on the 91 freeway, before I got to Van Buren turnoff, it's a shortcut to get up to the mountain there. The mountain there, that's the one that the Palm Springs tram goes up. But anyway, I noticed in the sky the most unusual grid, tightest grid of contrails I've ever seen. And I'm going, man, I've never, you know, and I'm listening to the radio over the tragedy. I couldn't believe it. And I'm looking out while I'm driving down the 91, I'm pulling over to get off the Van Buren off ramp, and I'd see this grid. I go, wow, look at this. This is incredible. So an hour later, I get to Hemet to pick up my grandkids. We're going to go fishing up at the lake, at Lake Hemet. And I felt like I was drugged. I stayed there. I was at their house for about getting ready, probably 45 minutes. And I'm going, you guys, I feel like I'm on depressants. I feel drugged.
Jeez.
Like I'm on painkillers. And I'm like, what the heck? And I've always thought that they sprayed depressants on us after that tragedy to keep us calm. Is that possible? Is that possible, Peter? And then I have one more very strange story, too, after you answer that one about China Lake doing the same thing.
Okay. Yeah. So this was on the day that the Challenger exploded, right?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Michael?
Go ahead.
Okay. So the I'm not sure what year this was. I'm thinking that this sounds like quite a long time ago. I'm not sure that even the new Manhattan Project domestic spraying had started by then. I'm putting the beginning of the project in 1996. But what it might be like, you know, first of all, I'd like to say that I have a hard time believing that any type of pharmaceuticals or drugs or anything basically that would be so expensive to produce is being sprayed. I mean, we're talking about megatons of material here. They might be doing things like that on a very limited basis, smaller operations and things. But as far as large-scale operations go, you need a lot of stuff. And you know, coal fly ash really fits the bill for that. You have lots of material, and it's readily available. But you may have been feeling that like you were drugged, maybe because it was some type of first exposure. If it was a long time ago and all of a sudden you just noticed these things, then maybe it was your first exposure to it, and then it could hit you like that because, you know, first exposures are different than when you've been acclimated to a certain situation such as we have over the years with this thing.
Let's go to Mike's second question. Go ahead, Michael.
Okay, I lived out in the desert by China Lake, the F-18 test, Naval Weapons Test Center. And my neighbor had a homestead. We were the only two surrounded by 50,000 50,000 acres of BLM land. But this F-18 Hornet, they always used to come, drones and the F-18s used to come over our house. And it was wild living there. I lived there 10 years. But anyway, one time an F-18 Hornet with a wingman came roaring exactly opposite direction of the prevailing wind over our house. I would say down the 395, out on the 395, down about a mile. And this thing had full flaps and a weird white chalky substance was like being, it wasn't being sprayed. It was like they were, you dump out flour out of a container and you kind of shake it.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing was kind of tail dragging. And it did a 180 right in front of us over old Indian Joe's property and headed right back to China Lake. I mean, it was loud. I couldn't believe how loud it was. And all this white stuff was in the air and it took off. And I went to town. I went into Ridgecrest, came back, and I went over to my neighbors. I said, "Do you see what was going on?" She goes, "Yeah, I'm sick." I go, "I feel really sick, Mike." And then I started feeling sick, like I was going to throw up.
Well, there's something in there.
It's got to be this crap that's in the air.
There's something in there for sure. It's there. Whatever they're putting in there. Peter, how many people do you think may have died from all this stuff?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a tough question, but I think, what comes to mind first is this connection to Alzheimer's. This is probably the most well-documented connection. I mean, we know that breathing in any type of particulate matter is bad for you. You know, this is not rocket science. There's plenty of studies. I just, dump like 20 studies in the references in the book to, studies that have said that breathing particulate matter is bad for you. So right off the top, there's that. But then the stuff that we're breathing in is toxic waste. So, and it's got like, radioactive particles in it. I mean, we're talking about barium and strontium. But the aluminum is apparently causing Alzheimer's. This has been the most well-documented, and we have CDC data for this that shows that the rate of Alzheimer's has been going up since about 1996. And we all know it's been going through the roof. It was quite a rare disease before all this started happening. And just from Alzheimer's alone, we're probably looking at hundreds of thousands of deaths. So, it's really hard to say what people died from, especially when we don't have data. But I would hazard to say just here in America, probably millions. I don't know. Over a million.
And that's probably a light guess, Peter.
I'm actually trying to be conservative.
Name of the book, second edition, Chemtrails Exposed, The New Manhattan Project, available on Amazon.com. And Peter's website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with Peter in a moment as we talk about chemtrails. You can see that little, like, spider web mist all over your bushes and stuff sometimes in the morning. That's got to be something, too. You folks, you see it all the time. We'll be back with more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Dory with you. Our final segment with Peter Kirby, author of Chemtrails Exposed, and he is going to make writing his living. You talk about Florida, biological impacts. What the heck is happening in the Sunshine State?
Florida. Oh, yes. We are talking about Dr. Michael Whiteside, and I'm finding the area here. Yes. Believe it or not, the sitting medical director of the Florida Department of Health is writing peer-reviewed anti-geoengineering journal articles along with Marvin Herndon. He's been a co-author on quite a few of these. Marvin apparently has called him in. Dr. Herndon has apparently called him in because he is more of an expert on the biological aspects of these things. Dr. Herndon is more of a physicist. So Drs. Mark Whiteside, the sitting director of the medical of the Florida Department of Health, I have to keep on repeating that because, it sounds so incredible.
Yeah, exactly.
These two co-authors, Herndon and Whiteside, have written probably, I'm guessing, maybe 15, maybe as many as 20, I think about 15 co-authored papers. And some of the subjects, these are all peer-reviewed. These are all journal published, reputable journals, peer-reviewed articles. They've covered the topics of neurodegenerative disease among humans from exposure to coal fly ash, the chemtrail,
mm-hmm.
All these papers are in relation to our exposure or animals' exposure to this coal fly ash. They've written about respiratory disease and lung cancer. They've written about heart disease. And then as far as the environment is concerned, they've written about harmful plankton blooms. They've written about insect die-offs. They've written about bird and bat population declines.
They're on top of things.
Yeah, so they're basically covering the whole panoply of things going on here, and all in relation to what the spray that we're being exposed to, and it's bad.
And also, what's going on with the work of Dr. Michael Persinger from the Laurentian University?
Yes, he is a very interesting subject here. He's up there in Ottawa, Canada. He's been at Laurentian University for quite a while. And I have come to recognize his work as quite seminal in all of this. And he wrote a book in 1980. It was published with a quite interesting title. It was called The Weather Matrix and Human Behavior. So this is a work of what we call biometeorology. So this is the effect upon people's biological state, depending on what the weather is at the time, or, you know, of their environment, direct impacts upon people's biological state chiefly from weather phenomenon. And in this book, The Weather Matrix and Human Behavior, this is like a $300 book if you look it up on Amazon. Thank God I was able to photocopy the entire book at UCSF in San Francisco. They just let me come into their library, and I had to pay for the copies, of course, but I was very, very happy to pay, you know, like $25 in copies for it.
Sure.
Yeah, so, and in the book, he describes humans as, quote, a large antenna. And he talks about how ELF fields of electromagnetic energy, these are extremely low frequency fields of electromagnetic energy, can be applied to these large antennas from, quote, hundreds of kilometers away. So he's talking about these ELF fields, and what he's talking about is, he's talking about the Schumann resonance. This is a certain frequency of electromagnetic energy that is naturally produced by the Earth. It's also the same frequency that our brains produce. And so this is a fundamental frequency to life on this planet. And he's talking about how you manipulate it here. And he talks about the effects of ELF waves upon human organs. And he even quotes he even references the work of a former Nazi scientist by the name of Hans Dolzalek. And this man, Hans Dolzalek, has done quite a bit of work in the areas of atmospheric electricity. And this is, you know, very pertinent to the new Manhattan Project. And Dr. Persinger writes about how when humans inhale ionized particulate matter, and that's what we're breathing in. We're breathing in charged particles. I believe they charge the particles as they come out of the plane.
No wonder there's so many respiratory infections.
Yes, yes. Dr. Persinger writes that when we breathe in these particles, it is like, quote, a sudden injection of a chemical. When you breathe these things in, it's akin to being having substances injected into your veins with a hypodermic needle. So, you know, they're really hitting us with this stuff. And, you know, Dr. Persinger has been quite public about his work and all these things. He has a YouTube channel and a Twitter account, Dr. Michael Persinger. You can look him up. I found a 2011 YouTube video where he's talking about human brains and the Earth sharing the Schumann resonance and how this all interacts. But, I find it quite diabolical that he's also writing about how you can shoot frequencies at people and basically, you know, manipulate all this type of stuff.
Let's go to Chris in Tampa, Florida. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You there?
work nights.
There you go.
I work nights, and my window faces east. And right before sunrise, I always see these parallel lines. They're always parallel, never checkerboarded. And they form into a thin cloud cover. And my question is that bioengineering, or we also have MacDill Air Force Base here, which is Central Command. Maybe they're just trying to stop satellites from taking pictures.
Well, you never know. Go ahead there, Peter.
Yeah, well, it could be anything. They're not telling us what they're doing. So, you know, it's been left up to us to pick up the pieces here and try to figure out what's going on.
We got to speculate about all this stuff, don't we?
Yeah, you know, it's largely covered in my motives chapter. You know, why are they doing this? I've uncovered a lot of more tangible reasons why, I suppose, but there's so many agendas that play into this whole thing. I mean, we're talking about something that pervades the entire atmosphere, lower atmosphere, and you know, we're talking about things going on up into outer space. So, you know, everything in the space between down here on planet Earth and outer space is involved in this whole thing. So, you know, so many different things could be going on. It just absolutely boggles the mind. I hope someday that we gain a better understanding of all the things that they've been doing. But, you know, I've tried my best in the book, and I think you'll find quite a few convincing arguments in there.
Frank in Hollywood, Maryland's with us now. Hi, Frank.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you. Yes. I'm going to ask another one of my dumb questions. Because I was in the convenience store getting a cup of coffee. I missed only a few minutes of the program. If they can manipulate the weather, how come they can't put out these fires, these deadly fires in Southern California that kill a number of people and destroy homes and jobs? And my second question has got to do with the Catholic Church in the running these Nazis across to freedom. I mean, the Catholic priests that I've talked to over the years, they deny it. They said, well, they helped only a few families escape, but the Nazi officers came along with them. But that's neither here nor there.
They used to call Pope Pius XII Hitler's Pope, didn't they, Peter?
Oh, absolutely. The eminent historian John Cornwell has written a book by that title, and that's one of the books that I've read, Hitler's Pope. It was titled, there was a subtitle too, I believe. But there was another book by Paul Williams again. It was called The Vatican Exposed, that really got the details and the dirt on that whole story. So it's very well documented, the whole thing. And yeah, I mean, you often get denials from people that either don't want to believe what happened or are ignorant as to what happened. You know, there's quite a few reasons as to why someone might deny that happened, but it did. You know, the way the publishing industry works is if you have a publisher, I'm just self-published, but you have a publisher like Paul Williams, they check and double-check and triple-check all that stuff. They're not going to publish that type of stuff if it's not true. You know, that's very incendiary if it's not true. And then, so, yeah, it is true, and it's well-documented. And then the first question
about
was
the fires.
Why are there these fires? The fires are there because they're not trying to help you. Okay, this is a secret project that's been done without us knowing about it for a very long time. And, you know, the people that have brought us this project are operating in what they think is their best interest, not yours. You know, if it was done in our best interest, then it wouldn't be secret. And we'd know about it, and they'd be telling us about it all the time. So, they're operating on their agenda, not yours.
Webmaster Lex tells us that Dr. Michael Persinger died in 2018, by the way, Peter.
Okay, I did not know that.
So, Frank, thank you for your question. And there are no dumb questions, Frank, on this program. You know that. We've got Gina Maria now in Seattle, Washington. Hello there, Gina Maria.
Hello, love and peace, and God bless to everyone and everything everywhere.
Thank you.
Thank you. I want to tell a little story and then ask a question. I was flying from Florida back to the state of Washington, and I was behind the wing just by a little bit, and I saw cross underneath our plane, really, really close, two jets, I believe, cross each other and cross underneath our plane and sprang something out the back. And I believe it was chemtrails. I mean, I have no way to, you know, be positive, but I absolutely believe that. They were making some sort of grid crisscross pattern. And I looked around the plane, and nobody else was aware of it. They were all on their phones or, you know, watching a movie or whatever. And it seemed like no one saw this but me. I wonder if you've ever heard of this happening and if anybody's ever told you something like that from a plane.
No, I've never heard of an instance particularly like that. I mean, you know, of course, we've all of us who are chemtrail aware have experienced the ignorance of many people, but not something like that in particular. Yeah, well, you know, I don't like to be too negative, especially when I'm on Coast to Coast AM having a good time, but, you know, over the years, the ignorance of people has astounded me many, many times. That's something that I would definitely be paying attention to if I were on a plane, and you know, of course, if they're spraying chemtrails, I'd be even more interested. But just having, you know, other planes in the vicinity of your plane is interesting to me. But, you know, people don't want to be bothered with anything that could potentially disrupt their, you know, small view of the world. It's
no, they don't.
Free thinkers that listen to shows like Coast to Coast AM and call in, and, you know, but we're the percentage of the population that actually change things. It's there's a famous quote from somebody, I don't know who, I forgot who, I should have this all together, but they say that don't let anybody tell you that a small group can't change the world. It's always been small groups that have, the only way that any change has ever happened has always been from a small group of dedicated individuals. So, you know, you can have a small percentage of the population that really moves the needle, and that's what I'm counting on.
Peter, give out your website, if you would, please.
Yes, my website is my name, peterakirby.com, and I would like people to sign up to my email list there if they don't buy the book, or if they do buy the book, you know, please sign up to the email list. Please buy the book on Amazon.
And we've got it linked up at coasttocoastam.com. The name of the book is called Chemtrails Exposed, A New Manhattan Project. This is the second edition. He was last with us 5 years ago, and I guess that's when the book first came out, Peter, isn't it?
Well, it was right before the first edition came out. It was the first paperback edition came out in the middle of 2016. So it's been
right before. We got a little jump start for everybody on that.
Yeah, you were ahead of the curve, George, as usual.
Well, good luck with your new career as a full-time author, and I hope everything works out for you, Peter.
Thank you so much, George. You're a national treasure.
Up next, of course, Bryce Zabel, the Hollywood producer and author, joins us to talk about UFO disclosure and a number of other projects he's been working on. We're going to have a little UFO fun on Coast to Coast AM. And then, of course, in our last hour of the program, we will take your phone calls on Coast to Coast. Don't forget to subscribe for free to our YouTube channel, Coast to Coast AM Official, up there in the top of the search bar at YouTube. And then like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and we'll be back in a moment with Bryce Zabel on Coast to Coast AM.